Blog Talk Radio.
I love it though. I love it though. You know? Put your hands to the constellations. The way you look should be a sin. You my sensation. I know I'm preaching to the congregation. We love Jesus, but you done learned a lot from Satan. Nina did a lot of waiting. We ain't made. Man, welcome to another edition of Hustle and Flows. It's Marcus the Game Changer. I'm in here with my man Sekou. We're going to hold you down for the next hour on the podcast, talking hip-hop, culture, television shows, sports, you name it. We're going to cover it in the next hour. We're going to cover a lot of ground. I got my man Sekou in the house. It's been a minute since we've been able to get on. Two brothers who are super busy. But love the music, love the culture. So we got to take some time out and just give you our opinions on a few things that have been going on. A lot has been going on since the last time we were on air. So with no further ado, let me bring in my man, Sekou. How you been, brother?
Man, listen, I'm good. I tell you what, though, I miss the old Kanye.
Absolutely. That's why I played that one. I was like, let me see, what do I want to bring us in with? And I was like, you know what? It was totally on purpose that I did that, given our context for tonight. We're going to talk a little Kanye, J. Cole, Tribe, De La. We're going to be all over the place a little bit with some different things, but it's all going to come back to the core of hip-hop and music and culture and how it intersects across all these different things. But, yeah, I feel you, bro. I miss the old Kanye as well. Why don't we start there? Why don't we just go ahead and start there?
Why not?
So for those of you that have been living under a rock or not on any social media, Kanye has been going through it. Now, you know, if you're a fan of RSG and the Real Sports Guys, on our last The Big Show podcast with myself, Devon, and PhD, I kind of laid out my feelings towards Kanye right now. And it's the Kardashian curse, man. And young black men all over the world, man, avoid them as much as you can. All right? It has not ended well for us. Like,
nobody.
You know, I'm starting
nobody
to think this
escaped.
Is an extension of the Tuskegee experiment or something. You know? Like, this is the new Tuskegee. Like, it's just not, God, brothers go in and they do not come out the same.
Oh, man.
So
yeah,
we
got to
be on alert. Go ahead.
You know, the thing that I keep reminding myself is, you know, I think this is in keeping with the kind of he's shown us the signs, right? So this is not like out of the blue. He's kind of set himself up to be, you know, this mad genius artist, scientist persona. And I think he truly believes it, right? And so when the dude starts spitting crazy stuff on stage, you know it's not, well, here's what I'm going to say, and that's going to create a Twitter, you know, storm. And no, he really is like, hey, Jay, please don't come for my head. And, you know, I haven't seen, you know, your daughter. Like, what's happening? Like, he's literally just going through it. So part of me is always like, okay, at least there's not pretense. I don't feel like I'm being played. But the other part of me is always like, you know, do you have any real friends? Like, do you have any real friends that can kind of pull you aside and be like, here's probably what you should do with your life in the next 2-3 weeks. Like, you just got out of the hospital. What you shouldn't do is go dye your hair blonde and talk to Donald Trump. Like, you shouldn't do that.
No.
You should just kind of lay low, rest, spend some family time, you know, so that's the part that always kills me, but he feeds off it. I mean, he will probably take this and turn it into a sneaker line and another crazy, you know, song. I mean, part of me is also like, this is kind of his artistic process now, is to just do all this crazy stuff and then use that as his inspiration for his next masterpiece.
Yeah, and I think that is where he's at, right? Like, and this is kind of the cycle with rappers. You come in as a young buck, and you're hungry as heck, and your first album is like your whole life, right? It's an accumulation of your whole life in one album. And if you're successful, you know, maybe you got some material left over, some stories to tell for your second album. But then at some point, it's like, I'm not even living the life I was living on the album, on album one and album two anymore. So where do I find and how do I connect with that, like, zeitgeist that I had? You know what I mean? Like, how do I connect to that energy with that, with those impulses now that I'm so far removed from that because I have this buffer of people who keep me insulated from, like, the real world? Like, I have a manager. I have a weed guy. I have a, you know what I mean? Like, I have a guy that goes and gets girls out of the crowd for me. Like, I'm not even interacting with humans very much anymore outside of, like, my minions and my goons.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So, like, how does that then, like, especially for somebody who came in as, like, an everyman rapper, right? Like, a real down-to-earth dude who people could relate to, and you're super relatable, and that's your and that's really your appeal. Is that you're super talented, but you're also super relatable and down to earth and humble, and but also conflicted and normal at the same time. And then you start living this life of a super mega star entertainer, and it's hard to be that. And so then he kind of morphed into this, like, again, like you said, like mad scientist, evil genius persona. And I think it's ultimately a persona, and I don't think it's really him. And I think he's searching, like he's lost himself in his persona, right? Like he's become his alias. And that's always a dangerous thing is when you become too much, like when Superman stops being Clark Kent from time to time, you need some regulation, you know, like
so,
at some point, Batman has to go back to being Bruce Wayne.
Yeah. This is Fight Club, you know, revisited, right? Like you spend longer and longer being Tyler Durden. How do you go back to being you? Right. So that's,
he might
have gone full, like, you know, he's pulled the clan together. He's gone to multiple cities and he's been asleep for a couple of days. So hopefully old Kanye wakes up. But so speaking of this, right. So I think this transitions nicely into this whole J. Cole Kanye dust up. And so what are your thoughts on this? Because I think this is a lot of what, you know, the song, what's the name of the song now? I just skipped my mind.
False Prophets,
right? So, you know, it's not naming names, but, like, there's a strong consensus. Like, he's got to be talking about Kanye a little bit. And so what did you think? Do you think, like, hit the nail on the head? And then also recognizing the source of this track, what was your thoughts? Because I listened to it at least three or four times and had different thoughts every time I listened to it.
Yeah, so I listened to it a couple of times as well, and the first time I listened to it, I was like, yeah, he's definitely coming at Kanye. And I thought it was like, right, maybe this is the therapy this brother needs. Like, maybe Kanye needs to, like, just, like, have somebody kick him in the pants, and if the people around him will not do this, you know what I mean? Maybe it has to come from somebody who's looked up to him, you know, somebody maybe he's removed from maybe by two or three relationships. You know, there's a Jay connection, obviously, with Cole and Jay-Z, and maybe Jay-Z sent a little homie to go, you know, clean up the mess. Or maybe J. Cole just took it upon himself, like, yo, I got this. But I think it also seemed very sincere to me. At the same time, like, you know, it's his platform, and if this is someone he idolized, you know, it's kind of like, you know, as a baller, when I came up idolizing T-Mac, and toward the end of his career when he was always injured, and just kind of, you know, I knew a couple of guys who had played with him, like, you know, in the pros, and they were saying, like, he don't care, man. He don't practice hard. He, you know, and I was like, that kind of sucks, man. Dude had it. Like, he was the dude. You know, it's that kind of same feel where it's like, yo, man, I idolize this dude. And now I'm hearing, like, yo, he's not even, like, he's still in checks. You know what I mean? He's still in checks from the Rockets. You know what I mean? Like, this is my guy.
And
the
Nick.
Magic. Yeah, you know, bamming on people, coming down the lane like ridiculous, you know, playing killer D, scoring 30 a game. And then, like, he's shooting 41% from the field, or, you know, trying to scrape out 22 points a night. And it's just like, and he's looking heavy and slow. And it's like, what's going on? And you're like 28. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But he had been in the league for 10 years. So it's just one of those situations where it's kind of like, as a baller, I could see myself kind of writing that letter to T-Mac, like, yo, I kind of like idolized you and patterned myself after you. And then you kind of went this way. And I don't know what to think of that now anymore. Like, you know, so I understood kind of that perspective from J. Cole when I heard it. What were your thoughts?
So I thought it was sincere. I guess my initial thing was, you're half piling on, right? To kind of, so like, I think it's really easy in the last, you know, couple of months to say, like, come up with a track that's like, yeah, Kanye, man, this dude, not really what he was. It's like, yeah, we know, like, we know, we watch the news, we see it. At the same time, and I think we disagreed upon this in May, but The Life of Pablo is a good album, right? Like, I was like, so J. Cole's talking to, like, oh, this is, things are falling apart, and I don't know if his heart is in it. And I'm like, J. Cole, if you made an album as good as The Life of Pablo, that would be your best album, right? So if this is him, if this is Kanye falling apart, and he's on tour, selling out, and the show that from people I know have gone to, they say it's amazing. And I've seen Kanye in concert. He's amazing. He's amazing in concert. Like, the thing I love about the album is, and I recognized this about him earlier, is that he makes albums for concerts, right? Like, he has in his mind, you can tell, like, this song could feed into that song, and this is the kind of vibe and it's a show. That's why his albums kind of have this feel to him. So, you know, on one hand, I'm like, okay, yeah, he's kind of gone off the rails recently, but all things considered, I don't know if I think that Cole's in a position to say, oh, your ego's getting in the way, and you know your life's falling apart, and you got a lot of people writing for you, and yeah, I just part of me kind of felt like, I don't know. So, you know, and that was the first time I was doing it. Then other times I said, okay, maybe he is kind of also talking about the game in general and having idolizing any rapper, including himself, and, you know, part of it is his own fault for putting Kanye on some kind of pedestal that he probably doesn't deserve because he's just a dude that raps. But, you know, part of me is also kind of still on that vibe of, I don't know if you should be throwing rocks. Part of me is like, I think you should just, you know, make a comment, but to drop a whole, you know, the tone of it was just very like, he was lecturing. I was like, I don't know if you're in a position to lecture Kanye. So your point is like, yeah, I was like, yeah, there's probably five people that could probably do that, and I don't think you're one of them. You know, so it was a reach in my view. So that's what I kept coming back to.
Okay, and I can understand that. Now, again, we disagree on Life of Pablo. We already hashed that out. We just will. I kind of agree with Cole's perspective. If you interpret it as he's coming at Kanye, I definitely felt like Life of Pablo was like, I don't know, like, yeah. I felt it was a mess. And I felt like it just was too disjointed and not – it was Birdman-ish. Like, we talked about that off air. It's kind of Birdman-ish. It's like, you know, where's this going? Like, what? Like, there were some great songs. There were some great songs on there. No Parties in L.A., Real Friends, Faded was great. Again, Ultralight Beam was great, but it wasn't because of Kanye. And I felt like that kept happening on that album. And I won't go into it again, but it just felt like his moments of engaging on the album were the moments I liked the least. I like the things that the people he brought in were doing. And his actual part in it I didn't enjoy. And, like, you can't keep getting sunned on your own records. Like, you can't have the worst part on your own record over and over and over. And that's just what I felt like.
He was better than Designer. He was better than Designer.
I
he won
know,
that
I, yeah.
one.
Good for you. Good for Kanye. You got desired. But in the same vein, though, like, I hear what you're saying. Like, maybe Cole isn't the guy that has the credentials to come at Kanye, but sometimes isn't that what it takes for progress, is for someone underneath you to push you, to challenge you, to kind of, like, nudge you? And sometimes that comes from those who are coming up behind us, or the younger generation pushing the older elders to, like, hey, we need to step outside of our box. We need to push the envelope a little bit further. And that's progress. And that, in most settings, sort of cultures or subgroups, that's how it evolves. So I can appreciate that, where you have the young head saying, you know, at some point somebody's got to step up and say, hey, I'm ready. I'm ready for this moment, and I'm going to give it a shot. And, you know, you're not LeBron until you make the play, right? Until you take the shot, you know? And so Cole is taking that shot. And I'm not mad at him for that. You know, I agree. I agree. Maybe he doesn't have the resume to do it, but also, I mean, if it's a legit shot at Kanye, or a general kind of introspective, like, this is the game and this is how we go about it. He definitely, as you said, the timing isn't coincidental.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
And then, like, he dropped an album. I was like, wait a minute.
Right, you know what you're doing.
And then I got to listen to the album. Yeah.
Like, yeah, you know what you're doing. So, you know, I will never peg him as that naive of an artist. So I think it was timed out in that way appropriately to promote the album. Mm-hmm. Speaking of the album, your thoughts on the album and kind of where you're at with it.
Yeah. So, you know, now that we've had this conversation, I think maybe that song has has influenced how I felt about the album, because I heard that song first and kind of was like, I don't know. And then I was like, okay, so now you have an album. Okay, well, this one better be good, because you just came hard body at Kanye. So I'm expecting this to be like, you know, Forest Hill Drive on crack or something. I thought it was entertaining. It was, you know, a little, I don't know what the word is. You know, we're kind of talking a little bit. It took me a while. It's growing on me, but I do not love it. I like it. I don't love it. I've read a couple of things, and I try not to do this, but I couldn't help it. People just writing about it's boring. It's a boring album. I don't think so. I think this is kind of in keeping with J. Cole. I mean, it's very sentimental. It's a concept album, and so he's building and putting characters in it. It's very deliberate. I think maybe he could have gotten to the point a little faster, but at the end, I was like, oh, all right, cool. This is a good album. Is this going to knock other albums that I've been listening to all year out of the box? Unclear at this point. But you know, is it good music? Yes. So, you know, if that's the case, you know, lyrically, I think Cole is, you know, one of the better ones out. And when he puts his mind towards something, he's clever. It's heartfelt. It's, you know, he's musical. He has a good feel for music. His flow kind of adapts to the music, and so that's pretty good. So I thought it was good. But I'm still trying to get a sense to whether I like it, or I just feel compelled to like it because, you know, it's Cole, and, you know, if I don't want this, then what kind of album am I waiting for if I don't want an album like this?
Right. Yeah. And all those points are, I think, solid perspectives on it. And we kind of talked about this off air for a bit, but, you know, I'm kind of in that same boat where I like it, but I'm not necessarily drawn to play it over and over and over again. After the first listen, I kind of was like, okay, I get it. This is good. The music is good. It's sonically good. His flow is good. The storytelling is solid. I get it. It all came together. And I understand what he was trying to do. And then I was kind of like, okay, yeah, I don't need to hear it again. Not right now, at least.
Back to Tribe.
Yeah. Yeah, like, okay, yeah, I'll go ahead and, yeah, put Tribe back on and bump that some more.
Yeah.
So that's kind of where I was with it. As I kind of was thinking about it and kind of letting it ruminate in my head just as a concept, and we talked about, like, it's a concept album. Nobody calls them that anymore nowadays, but, you know, that's mm-hmm. what it is. When you think about concept albums from the 90s where a rapper just doesn't go and check the industry boxes of A Song for the Ladies, your drug dealing street song, your posse cut, your club
yeah.
joint, you know, your lyrical battle song, and they don't do that. You know, and they're trying to do something artistic. You know, back then we called that a concept, a concept album.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that's very much what this is in that sense. And like I said, nobody will call it that, but that's what it is. But it reminded me of, like, Good Kid, Mad City, where Kendrick is going through and telling this story, but it wasn't as the songwriting wasn't as accessible, I guess is a good term. As Good Kid, Mad City was, where Kendrick mixed in just like catchiness with
yeah.
everything that he was while he was telling his story. He wrote some really catchy songs
yep.
on Good Kid, Mad City, from Don't Kill My Vibe to Backseat Freestyle,
mm-hmm.
Swimming Pools. I mean, all of these
swimming
songs
yeah.
to even other songs like, you know, Sing About Me. All these other songs that were super lyrical, but also accessible and catchy if you weren't, like, going to break down his lyrics. You know what I mean? Like, if you weren't going to sit and, like, just zone in on the words, like, it was still a song that you could listen to and just, like, be mindless and kind of enjoy it. Not mindless, but just zone in on the other parts of the song outside of the lyrics.
Yeah.
And this is a musical song. This is a musically, it's a good album, but it's not like Good Kid, Mad City when you talk about the concept, storytelling, I'm going to take you on a trip. But it did kind of give me that vibe of, and Kendrick's, you know, always his, one of his quotes and Pac and the interview he had with Pac on the To Pimp a Butterfly was, you know, we're just letting our dead homies tell stories through us. You know, and
mm-hmm.
that's what I got from this, from Cole. Like, this
yeah.
was him letting a dead homie tell a story through him, right? And I was waiting
yeah.
at some point for him to, like, kind of get at that, like, even use that as a, like, use that sample, you know, like, throw that in
yeah.
somewhere, you know what I mean? Like,
because uh-huh.
that's what it was, and that's what it is. And so those are my, you know, that's kind of how I felt about it.
Well, that's good, yeah. And I think there is clearly between him and Kendrick, like, a, you know, this one-upsmanship, right? They are battling for, or they're dropping projects that push the other, and you can kind of see it back and forth. And that's probably another reason why I appreciate it, is because, A, not only is it on its own, you know, a good album, but also it, because people look up to J. Cole, people see, you know, him being successful, making albums like this, and I'm like, that's exactly what I would like to see more of, right? So I want to see more albums that are positively influenced by Forest Hills Drive and For Your Eyes Only and Good Kid, Mad City, maybe a little bit To Pimp a Butterfly. You know, I came around on that album, but I'm still like, ah, could have done so much more. But so, you know, the you know, this kind of album and what he's doing to me is really impressive. To kind of be, I mean, he's signed to Roc Nation, whatever, but he pretty much does these on his own, right? I mean, he's pretty much like he's acting and operating like an independent artist, making albums that he thinks are good. He has total control. He's not letting anybody from the label tell him what he should or shouldn't do. Does he have anybody on this album? I don't think so, right? He didn't have anybody
No.
Oh, he just had, I thought he had, what's her face on one track. I thought Rhapsody was on one track, but now I can't remember.
Maybe she wasn't. Yeah.
I'm thinking of something else. But there's pretty much nobody. It's him, right? And so,
yeah,
you know, certain part of me, I was like, man, that is difficult. He has, you know, pretty much etched out a kind of area for himself where he's like, I am Russell Westbrook up in this piece. I am going to do it all. I'm playing by nobody's rules, and I'm just going to dominate. And when I dominate, and you know, when you know, you see the stat line, then you're like, that's all him. That's all Russ. Right. There's no he
right,
didn't get a help.
Right.
He didn't get help from anybody. There's no, oh, yeah, well, you know, the producer, he produces most of the songs. So in that way, you know, he's definitely kind of following that Kanye link. But he's got more Kendrick, thankfully, you know, as far as lyrically, he's really trying to do some interesting things. So, you know, I don't want to sound like I hate the album. It's, you know, not one of my favorites, but it'll definitely be something. As soon as I find two or three songs I really like, that'll help change. Because right now I'm like, I don't know, Immortal, I kind of like that. Folding Clothes, Neighbors. Neighbors is the song that I was like, okay, I think I might actually like this song, like for real, for real. And so, you know, we'll see.
Right. Right. Yeah, and I agree with you. Immortal kind of caught me. Folding Clothes is super catchy, but it's like not catchy. You know what I mean? Like, I get it. Like, you want to be like every man in love. You know what I'm saying? Like, just a regular dude, like doing regular stuff for your woman just because you care, and it's just like a mundane, like regular thing. But I just don't see it catching on. I just don't see that popping. Like, I can't see nobody like hashtag or folding clothes. You know what I'm saying?
Jay
you know,
started
not,
us on the 4.6. You know, trends start the Hublots and now folding clothes, man.
Yeah.
Come on. That's next in line.
Right. Right. Yeah. So we'll see. So you mentioned like it's not going to knock some things that you're listening to out of the box. What are some of the things that you're kind of bumping right now?
So I think we both mentioned the Tribe album. I mean, the Tribe album, I'm in the process now of doing my year in review, my hip hop year in review. There's going to be a lot of Tribe. Surprise, surprise. But the Tribe album, I just cannot stop listening to this thing, man. It's kind of amazing in that it's been 18. I mean, we did, I think we talked at the beginning of the year about, 2016. Oh, let's dig in the crates and look at some 1996, you know, 20-year reunion. And we talked about Tribe then. And you couldn't have paid me $1,000 and said like, oh, Tribe is going to drop an album later this year and you're going to love it. I'm like, no, like they're in a box. I will always love that album from 20 years ago. And you know, I've just resolved myself to that being the case. So to have something come out, as soon as I heard it was coming out, I got super nervous. Right, like, oh, this is terrible.
Right,
like, this is going to be the end. Like, this is going to be Jordan in the Wizards uniform, right? Like, just, you're going to have to force yourself to forget this. And so when I finally listened to it, and to listen to how good it was, like, not even handicapping it, not even biased, like, it's just good. I had people, like, the IT dude in my job, who's from New York, and he just came, he's like, you heard the new Tribe album? And I was like, yeah. He's like, man, it's good. I was like, it is good. You know, I was like, we have never talked about music or anything, but he just knew, like, Sekou's going to listen. You know, it just brought people together in a way from all walks of life. And so that one is in steady rotation. But I think probably everyone's listening to that. One other one that maybe people aren't listening to is I've really taken a liking to this Game EP, the 1992, I think it's called.
Yeah. And you know, we talked about this before. I'm always conflicted on Game, but he brought it.
Uh-huh.
This is a game I love. I love this. If I get more of this game, I'm in.
I'll let
you say your piece, and then I'll talk about how I feel about it.
No, I mean, it was exactly what I mean. He's someone that you could tell was like, I really want this to feel like a 90s album. And he just did it. And it was anti-conceptual album. Like, it was based in 92, and he had the production. He used a lot of, you know, tracks from that area, the era. But in essence, it was just him spin bars over, you know, good beats. I thoroughly enjoyed it. And so I find myself kind of almost guiltily like, yeah, I know I should probably be listening to, like, you know, Coloring Book and all these other, you know, highly heralded, highbrow kind of albums, but that 1992, that thing bangs. So I listen to a lot of that.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. I'm in with you on that one. And it's kind of, I just stumbled upon it. Like, I wasn't looking for it. I wasn't kind of checking for it. I wasn't waiting on it.
Mm-hmm.
I happened to just be kind of poking around, looking to see on Spotify, looking to see what had come out and what was new. And I saw it, and I was like, well, let me check it out. You know what I mean? And
yeah.
About three songs in, I was like, yo, this is great. I mean, from the juice to however you want it. I mean, like, he just – He brought it. I mean, I'm just like, yo, man, I like this. I like this a lot.
Yeah.
And it was one of those unexpected surprises, like finding $20 in your winter coat on the first day you wear it. Like, oh, this is nice. I left this in my coat, or, you know, last winter, and I found 20
mm-hmm,
bones. That's
exactly.
Great. Absolutely. And the Tribe album, as you said, like, there was some trepidation and some nervousness and some fear around just how this was going to go. I imagine, and again, I wasn't a major, like, Tribe wasn't a huge part of, like, my induction into hip-hop. I was aware of them. I enjoyed the music, but it was, like, Outkast was my, like, Tribe, right? That was my era as Tribe, and that was, and so I was, like, if Outkast were to drop an album in the next 5 years, I'll be like, oh, this guy, it has to be good. Like, it has to be good. Like, they've never dropped a bad
album. Otherwise,
bury
it. Yeah.
You're right.
Don't,
like,
let it come
out. I'm
going
to act like it never happened. Like, if it's bad, I'm going to totally act like it never happened. Because that's, like, where they are for me. Like, they're on that pedestal for me. Where, like, they can do no wrong. And when they do do wrong, I'm going to act like it didn't happen.
Yeah.
And so there was
yeah.
I could see that, like, nervousness amongst, like, my friends who are, like, Tribe heads, and they're like, okay. They all kind of had their fingers crossed, like, oh, this has to be good. This has to be good. And they were nervous because it's been a minute. It's been a minute, and you just weren't sure if they still had it, and boy, do they got it, man. I mean, every guest appearance was just a perfect usage of a feature. You know what I mean? Like, they kind of melded everything together in just the right amounts and just the right ingredient, and it just is a heck of a project, man. It's fantastic. I mean, and sonically, it bounces all over the place, where it's not like, that's the one thing with For Your Eyes Only, like, it kind of has a steady flow to it, where one song kind of melds with the next song, but I feel like Tribes does that, it melds, but each song is kind of a song, like, it's its own, like, little entity, but it fits within the greater context of everything. But it's like, you know, Rodman is on the Bulls, and you got Pippen, and you got Jordan, and you got Kukoc, but they're still the Bulls. It's still a championship squad, and they're all different in their own way, and they all kind of have their own beat, but they fit together, and that's how I felt about it. I'll ask you, I haven't really kind of put it to thought yet. Maybe you have. Where do you rank it amongst Tribe's albums?
Oh.
Or is it too soon?
Wait, too soon, too soon. No, it is, it's not jumping, you know, the top two. It's not jumping Low End Theory or Midnight Marauders. Like, those, it's just not doing, nothing is doing that. Beats, Rhymes, and Life, which came out 20 years ago, it's probably on par with that one. So this might be their third best, which is kind of crazy to say because, you know, beside the fact that they are grown men, right? Like, making a hip-hop album for the first time together, 18 years. The last time we saw them was that documentary, which just broke my heart. So that was my fear. Like, my fear was this was going to be like the documentary on wax, like all the bad parts of that about them beefing and going back and forth and not getting on the same page. And so, you know, so this came out, so this was a real pleasant surprise. But I think I'd probably put it probably on par three, tied for third, maybe just below third, with Beats, Rhymes, and Life.
Yeah, interesting. I just wanted to throw that at you. I'm sure that probably caught you off guard, but
Yeah, no, no, it's good. So one other thing that I was thinking about, I was really thinking about just as I was getting ready to hop on the phone was part of, I wonder to what extent my love for this album, aside, all things aside, is that when was the last really good group album, hip-hop group album, right? Like groups now are Future and Drake get together and
right.
make an album, right? But they're not a group. So this is a
no.
group, like, you know, in the truest essence of the form. And I just tried to think, I didn't even look at anything. I was like, when was the last, and I've been doing these year in reviews, like top five since 2003. And I was trying to think of the last hip-hop group that was in the top five. Can you think of the last group album that was really, that was like one of the best of the year?
Yeah. Honestly, I would have to go, for me, I'd have to go back to like Grind Date, De La's Grind Date.
Yes. All right.
Like,
okay.
That's where I would get like, and I was like 05, maybe 04, 05.
Exactly.
Yeah, I think I was a year or two out of college. You know what I'm saying? Like that was a grip ago.
It's been a minute. I was like, all right, when was the last Little Brother album? Right. I was like, okay, you know, first I was like, all right, let me just go. What are the big groups?
Right.
And then you realize, like, okay, Outkast hasn't made an album together in a minute. Locks haven't been together. Like, there's been none. So that's
right.
the other thing of this that it's kind of mind-blowing is, like, this is a hip-hop group making a great album, which we haven't seen in maybe a decade.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's
right.
the other thing that kind of trips me out about it, too.
Yeah, and that's the industry, right? A big
mm-hmm.
piece of that is the industry and how – you know, we've moved away from the collectivism of hip hop, and it's all about, you know, I gotta maximize my monetary value, and I can't do that splitting it with two other dudes.
Mm-hmm.
You know
mm-hmm.
what I mean? Like, I'm not a good investment for a label if I'm cutting checks if three ways. And
yeah.
It's not worth my investment if I gotta split what the label is gonna give me three ways.
Correct.
And they're not going to give us enough where we're all going to feel satisfied or we're maxing out what we could be getting. So that's where the business part kind of killed the group. And, you know, somebody maybe need to do a documentary on that because I think you're right. It's a crazy phenomenon where there aren't groups very often and the groups that aren't making great music. I'd have
like
to
Run
really
the Jewels. Run
really,
the Jewels might be the
yeah.
only other one. And are
yeah.
they really a group?
Right, or is it like a, yeah, I mean, I'd say they are now, and the reason I say that is because my best friend is their tour DJ, and those dudes are a group, like, that is
okay.
a collective, they are a family.
All right.
Like, those dudes are all in together on this whole thing, and it's not like Mike is doing his thing over here, and LP is doing his thing over here, and then they pop in for a week in Atlanta, do an album, and then they go back to doing their own things, like, that's a real unit.
All right. So that might be the last one.
Yeah, I'd say that's probably it. And the only reason I say that is because I have an in, right? I'm on the inside on that one, and I know somebody who's a part of it. And just how they talk about it and how it really is kind of they are kind of a collective, in that sense.
Cool.
But yeah, man, it's few and far between. It truly is.
Mm-hmm.
It truly is. So as we talk about that, you know, De La also dropped an album this year, which surprisingly was really good. And again,
yeah.
De La, you know, the stakes is high is kind of where I was like, oh, De La Soul, they're hot, they're good. I really wasn't
mm-hmm.
of age to really be into their earlier stuff. So I kind of got in on stakes is high, and then they kind of like, you know, there was the Mosaic Thumps. And that kind
yeah.
of series,
art,
and
art
I kind of checked for
those. Artificial intelligence.
Yeah,
artificial,
yeah.
Uh-huh. yeah.
So those were cool. I enjoyed those, but
yeah.
I was never blown away by any of those until the
mm-hmm.
Grind Day. And when the Grind mm-hmm. Day came out, I was like, this I like. You know, and that year, I think The Fix had come out, Scarface is The Fix. And I'm like, yo, my two favorite albums are by, you know, like some real old heads.
Like 40, like legit 40-year-olds.
Right, like dudes who have kids probably my age. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I think Maceo has a son who's in the NFL. You know what I mean? Like, these are granddads now.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So, like, you know, De La's new album, again, is one of those where it is them being them, but it is definitely them today. And it works.
Mm-hmm.
And I enjoyed it a ton. And, again, it was one of those things where I was kind of like, oh, De La put something out? Let me just check it out. And it was like, wow, they still got it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So I enjoyed it. What were your thoughts on that particular project?
Very much the same. I was pumped. And so De La has done this, you know, grassroots Kickstarter kind of movement. I don't know if you are in on that. So so what did they do first? I'm trying to remember the first thing they did. I think they released all of their music, every album for free, right? And they were like, we will give you every De La Soul album for free if you, you know, sign up to our website and give us your info. And I was like, done, right? Like, you could have that. And then, you know, but obviously a lot of people did that. So then with those emails, they've been pretty much grassroots kind of a deal, right? So for this album, I'm pretty sure at two separate times I put money towards it. So they kind of funded this through like a self-run Kickstarter kind of deal. And so I was getting bits and pieces of this through that. And I was like, oh, yeah, this song is good. And, oh, yeah, man, this is really good. And, you know, they were kind of have these blog posts. And it's like, all right, this is what we're doing now. We're paying for studio time. And we're trying to do it the right way. And we're getting people together. We're not doing, you know, email and tracks. Like, we're really kind of recording it. So when the album kind of came out, I kind of knew what to expect. But at the same time, I was also still like, they could still screw this up, right? So, you know, let me listen to it. But, no, pleasantly surprised. Enjoyed it. Didn't jump at me. It's not Grind Date, right? So it's not a song that had three or four tracks that I was like, I have to listen to this over and over and over again. But that was something that I kept listening to just kind of in my office, just having on. Right. And I could like go in and out of listening to it. And I was like, oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I really like this song. Oh, yeah. This verse right here is good. And so a quality kind of album through and through. Grown man hip hop, as I like to call it. Right. Like, it's about big issues in the industry and kind of what the meaning of life, and but not in a preachy kind of way, which is kind of the sweet spot that De La Soul has figured out, like how to make a song that can be boastful, can be kind of introspective, and not be, you know, I'm grandpa, y'all come here and listen to the stuff I have to say, right? And so that right. was a pleasant surprise also.
Yeah, absolutely. So what other projects have you been digging? We kind of talked a little bit about my discovery of Mac Miller. I know I'm late to the party on that one. I'll take my late pass. but this Divine Feminine album, man, I just stumbled upon it and was like, let me check it out. I'm not busy right now. Let me listen.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, yo, I really like the whole vibe. I mean, it's got vibe, his lyrics, you know, Max, his voice has always kind of been a little different to me, but his lyrics are on point. He's got good guest spots, and they bring a lot of texture to it, and they add a little something extra to what he's got going on. But it's definitely got a vibe, and the vibe is that, I mean, I recommend it. I highly recommend it to anybody who's looking for something to get into. And then No Worries, which is one of Anderson .Paak's many projects, the Yes Law album is just fantastic, and that's something that's been in heavy rotation for me as well. And again, just that kind of funky West Coast vibe to it that Anderson has is all over this one. Just kind of, I don't know, it's like you're hanging out at a dice game.
So wait, this is an Anderson album? Or is it, what is it? I don't even know what you're talking about.
No Worries is like a side project that he had. And he's like the front man for like a group. And it's very much like, it sounds like Malibu to an extent. But it's definitely Anderson .Paak, heavily influenced. He's the main voice on it. But it's like him and a bunch of cohorts. So it's called Yes Lord. Lord with a LAWD. Yeah, so check it out. If you haven't heard it, check it out. It's good. Like I said, it's got that I don't know, it's got that 70s kind of funky thing that he does. I don't really know what words to put to it, but it's his sound. It's melodic, it's hard, but it jams. It's just more that. And I like it. So that's another one that I've kind of dug into and really enjoyed a lot.
Yes, Lord. Add that to the list. So Malibu might be my favorite album of the year. Like all genres.
Yeah.
Like that album, as soon as it came out, and I'm not an R&B guy, I probably listened to almost none, right? So I mean, it's just at this point where I was like, yeah, none of these guys, I wouldn't pay money to see any of these people, right? Like, I don't care how much dancing they're doing. Like, and I heard the Anderson .Paak, I was like, wow, this is amazing. This dude is really amazing. How does he have his own sound? And this is like really his first major release. I was like, that's pretty hard to do.
Yeah.
Like, say like, oh yeah, this is classic Anderson .Paak sound. And I was like, he just developed that. So yeah, I'll definitely be checking for that. Other things, so the Schoolboy Q, the Blank Face LP, that LP's great. Is this an album? Is it not? If he self-titles it an LP, I'm guessing he's saying, no, this is my album for real, but then it kind of feels like a mixtape, so I don't know. But I really like that one. I love Schoolboy Q. I mean, you could do no wrong. And then Rhapsody released... I'm going to say it's an EP. Yeah, it is an EP called Crown. And
I haven't had a chance to listen to it. I've saved it. I'm a big Rhapsody fan. Like, she's got that. She's carrying that Lauren torch for me right now, man.
Yes.
She's got the lyrics, and she's on point. She's got perspective. I appreciate Rhapsody.
Yeah, she's the one that I'm hoping can put together like a monster, good kid, mad city kind of release. Like, if there's anybody who's got it, she's got it. I mean, she's got the production support. I mean, the Ninth Wonder, Soul Council, that whole collective. And then, you know, people that she's, so I think, so Raphael Sadiq's on it, Anderson .Paak's on it, Absol is on it, right? Like, she just gets on with these crazy lyricists, and they just feed, you know, it's just back and forth. They're like, you can tell they're in the studio, like, I'm not bringing my B game. I ain't trying to get eaten. Rhapsody ain't about to own me. I'm coming with a good verse. And so it creates a really cool thing. So I'm hoping, you know, and now she's Rock Nation. And so, you know, maybe there'll be a major release that kind of finally kind of gets the widespread props that I think she deserves, because I mean right now, I mean, it's like Nicki Minaj is the female MC that garners all the attention, and I'm just like, that's one thing and that's fine, but man, there's a gem right here. And I, you know, most people when I say rap,
I agree,
like, oh, I don't know who is that, you know.
Yeah, I agree there's room for this other thing. Like, that doesn't mean Nicki has to go away, right? There can be that. There could also be this,
her
though,
Instagram,
right?
can stay.
It doesn't
her
have
Instagram
to be one or the
stay.
Other yeah.
Yes.
I'm not going to say all that on wax.
Instagram can hang around for a bit.
But, I mean, there's space for multiple images. You know what I mean? Like, and it doesn't have to be one or the other, or one versus the other. And I think it'd be good if we could see some more images, perspectives, impulses for young women to kind of latch on to, as far as just like understanding the game and getting introduced to music. One more I've been checking for a lot is the Awaken My Love by Childish Gambino. And this kind of segues us into our next conversation. But this one, he surprised me in that I have a lot of his previous music, and it's very electronic-y. You know what I mean? Like, it just has a very futuristic electro vibe to it. And this one is very much like Funkadelic inspired, which was an interesting kind of shift for him. And just when you think about like the things that people try and pay homage to and like recreate, nobody's ever really tried to go back and recreate Funkadelic. And he did it pretty well. I thought it was solid. It was interesting. It was different. I enjoy it. There's some joints on there that, you know, I play a lot, and it's a good, I like it. It's a good project, but it definitely is kind of a regurgitation of something else and not wholly original. It may be to a younger crowd, which is fine because that needs to happen too, right? Like that happened for me. Like hip hop and the sampling of hip hop introduced me to Earth, Wind, and Fire. And
yep.
The Funkadelic and Stevie Wonder and the Isley Brothers and all those groups from before my time. And it expanded my appreciation for music in general, particularly black music. And so that's important. And that's a good thing, even though some people may say, well, it's not original. You know, like my mom used to say, that ain't nothing but so-and-so sped up or whatever.
Sped up. They just chopped and screwed. Ain't none but Lionel Richie chopped and screwed.
Exactly. You know, as my mother used to point out to me every chance she got. I appreciate it. Have you heard that one?
So I've only heard a couple of tracks through the show, so through Atlanta. So I think me and your mama was on, or either on a show or on some kind of other thing that I was listening to, and it's one other song that I can't think of. But I was like, this is his new one, I guess. So I haven't listened to the whole album, just that and Zombies. So me and your mama and Zombies are the two tracks I've heard, and both of them, I'm like, these are good. They're, you know, Childish Gambino, so they're like, you know, not surface level, right? Like, you got to be listening and understand what you're hearing. Yeah. But he's just a talented guy, period.
He is. And so you brought up Atlanta. And, you know, Atlanta, so right now there's like this – right now we're in this, like, sweet spot for, like, black TV, in my opinion. Because there are lots of shows that kind of speak to a black audience, period. There's Atlanta. There's The Get Down on Netflix. You got Luke Cage on Netflix. You got Queen Sugar, which is on the OWN network. You got Insecure, which is on HBO, not to include things that are already out there like Black-ish, How to Get Away with Murder, shows of that nature. So there's a lot of black folks doing interesting things on TV right now, which I think is a good thing. And it's not run-of-the-mill stuff. It's like all original good stuff that is like, yo, this is cool. Like, so Atlanta is one of those things. And as I'm kind of getting into these shows, there's one common thing, though, with all these shows. Music is very much central to it. And it's central to moving the stories. It's central to the packaging and marketing of the show. So, for example, Queen Sugar and Insecure have, like, Spotify channels in which, like, they play music on the show. I think Solange, that's another one. Seat at the Table. I don't know if you checked for that one, but, you know, Solange Knowles' album, Seat at the Table, is ridiculously good. There are, like, six or seven songs on there that I just love. And, you know, I love them because my daughters love them. And that makes me proud as a dad. Like, I feel like I've done a good job.
There you go.
They like those songs. But she is the musical consultant for Insecure. And so, like, she, you know, you can tell, right? There's purpose to what they're playing. They're putting people on. They're giving shine to people who may not have shine. But the song, the songs are also just like, there's a song that just fits this scene, and it's just all about this scene. But it's an artist that maybe you haven't heard of, a song you maybe haven't heard. So I just think that's interesting, and that's refreshing because, you know, as a child of the 90s and kind of coming up in that era, the soundtrack to a movie was almost just as anticipated as the actual movie. Like, there are movies I didn't even see, but I got the soundtrack. You know what I mean? Like, there are movies that I could care less to see, but I got the soundtrack.
Above the Rim. Above the Rim soundtrack changed the game for me. And at that point, I was like, wow, you can sell, like, you can have a soundtrack go gold. Like, just
yes,
the soundtrack.
Right.
I was like, oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah. And so it just, it did. It changed the game, and it totally opened up this whole new market for introducing new music while also, like, keeping, you know, like, I would imagine Drake would be a soundtrack monster if he was in the 90s, because he just drops all these, like, loose joints all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And those are things that you would probably find on a soundtrack, you know, somewhere in the 90s, right? Like, oh, this soundtrack has this new Drake song on it. And it's just like just a one-shot deal. Like, he just had some music running around and was like, yo, pay me for it.
Yeah.
You can have it.
So I'll push back on this only a little bit. Because all of the things that you're mentioning, so I didn't know about Insecure and Solange there, which also makes sense. But when I look at, so Atlanta has Donald Glover, right, kind of managing that whole process. And he's an artist, right?
Yeah.
He's a guy that creates things. He's a writer, et cetera. Luke Cage, I mean, you pretty much had, what's the guy's name?
Adrian
Yaunge. I don't even know how to pronounce his last name. But, you know, he is a composer, right? So, like, he is an artist that creates music. And so these guys have hip-hop and stuff like that, but they're also really, really gifted composers. Drake, I just would, like, he would have verses, but the people who are doing this well are people who understand music
and understand how
to weave it together. And that's the part that excites me, because for a number of reasons. One, you know, I'm just sick and tired of people, like, throwing hip-hop into stuff. And, you know, no one from hip-hop really getting a chance to control it, right? And so so I used to watch 24 on Fox. And I was really into this show. And one of the things that I was really into was, like, the music was just ridiculous, right? It was like every, you know, anytime anything happened, the music got crazy. And so I was like, who does the music? And so this guy, Sean Callery, I'm also probably mispronouncing his name. And so I just happened to, because I love the show, he does the music for, like, half of the shows you watch. You know what I'm saying? Like, he has cornered the market on, like, any dramatic show that has any kind of, and they're going, dun, 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 and they're going, like, Sean Callery's doing that, right? So there is a way to, and he probably has a house that's bigger than Kanye. Probably got a pool bigger than Kanye's, right? And so it's like, there's obviously a lot of money to be made in doing these scores and controlling the music, aside from the fact you need to control it. And so it's nice to see, like, Adrian Yaunge is going to get that money, or Solange is going to get that money, or Donald Glover is going to have complete creative control. So that also pleases me. As well, because they're doing a good job, and it's also, again, helping them kind of grow and help and feeding the artists that are giving so much to the art form.
Yeah, yeah. So as we actually talk about the show, Atlanta, what do you think of the show?
It is, by a wide margin, my favorite thing on television. It's, like, not even close. Like, I watched the show with my wife. She is like, you love this show. I was like, you are, like, cracking up dying at shows. And it's like, it's true. And I mean, you know, it's written in this kind of quirky way. At least two or three times in it, I am, like, tears streaming down my face laughing, right? So, like, he's great. The Dude Paperboy, what's his name? Brian Tyree, I think is his name. He's great.
Yeah.
And then the episodes are just, it's like watching a combination of Boondocks and, like, the very best aspects of, like, all your favorite TV shows. And they're just ridiculous kind of premises. But at the same time, it's real people with real problems. It's so trill. It's just like, you know, these cats are just, I need to take my girlfriend out, and I have, like, $30. How can I turn this $30 into, like, $100? And every dude has been in that situation. It's like, I got this girl I like.
Right.
I'm praying to God she does not order steak, because I ain't got it, you know? And so moments like that just really make this show just great to me. I cannot speak more positively about a show than Atlanta.
Yes. I felt like it took the Chappelle impulse that was lingering in the ether space and just ran with it. You know what I mean? Where it's just like these things that happen and, like, you just need somebody to, like, kind of shed some light on, like, how awkward it is, or how different or like weird it is. And the level of satire that was in the show, just I'm in the same
it's
boat
super
as you.
Smart.
I kind of put my wife onto it. I was like, hey, this show Atlanta, and she was like, what channel is it on? I was like, FX. And she was like, we never watch anything on FX. And I was like, yeah, you're right. We're gonna watch this.
We're gonna watch this every last one.
Yes, we are going to watch this. And so she just got sucked into it. And from the first episode, with the whole jail scene.
Right? And so, aside from me, so it's hilarious, right? And this is what I love about the show is that it has this scene. It's ridiculous. It's hilarious. And they're talking. The dude with the other dude, he thinks he's a girl. And then it ends with, you know, the guy that's mentally disabled getting beaten down
by the cops,
right? And you're just like, oh. And then everyone's kind of like, oh.
Yeah.
Things just got real.
And
that
the whole conversation is like, yes. Yeah,
so,
and it's just like,
you know,
you're laughing and then you're like, but yeah, they be doing that. Like, you know what I mean? Like, you're laughing at it and you're like, yeah, that's what happened, actually. Like, he shouldn't be in there. He has a real issue and they're kicking his butt. You know what I mean? Like,
So the aspects of the show that they did, which was like the faux talk show, when Paperboy's on there and they're trying, you know, Tavis Smiley kind of dude was trying to get him to answer questions. I mean, just that whole scene had me dying. I mean, I was just laughing so hard. I was like, this is me. And it shows you like Donald Glover. Because I watched him when he was on Community, which is another show I love, and was also tremendously quirky, did a lot of, like, this kind of stuff that you see in this show. And so I think he's also picked off some things that really worked with Community. But Community was, NBC, primetime. It had to be very, everyone had to hug and make nice at the end. And here, like, there's a murder halfway through it. Well, at least a shooting. And, kind of came out of nowhere. That's when Mark was like, hold on, wait a minute, this is violent? I was like, I don't know what this is. I have no idea what this show is about. I don't know if it's a comedy or a drama or what, but I can't stop watching it. And so, there's just things in here that are really serious, but the show is just really good. So, season two can't come quickly enough.
Yeah. Yes. So there's the murder, and then it's just like they don't talk about it anymore.
I was like, that's got to come back at some point.
Yeah, like it's like gone, and it's like you just don't talk about it anymore. Like they mention it from time to time, like Paperboy shot somebody, but it just never kind of goes anywhere. Like he ain't getting locked up, it doesn't seem like. But you know, you have some highlights for me were the episode with the talk show. And the young man who's transracial, that was just gold for me, man. That was just gold.
That was like the Chappelle piece that you were talking about. Like that ethos of just like, you know what people are out here doing? Like, let me just give you a preview of what the craziness that people are out here actually claiming.
Yes, sir. That was it right there. So that was one of my highlights. The other highlight was the club episode where they were doing kind of promotional appearance and the nightclub owner had like a trap wall. But he's like, he's trying to get this money from him. And my man has like a secret wall and he pulls a fire alarm and the wall opens up and he just like slides behind the wall.
he lost him twice. Like, oh yeah. No, come on. Just follow me. And then he loses him in the club. Like, for real, dude? Like, you're a grown man, you gotta just walk fast with drinks? Like, he's trying to get out of this thing.
It's just brilliant. And then at the end, so, like, there's this whole, like, invisible car, like, rumor, right? And then you see people getting hit by an invisible car at the end of the episode. It's just freaking ridiculous, man. I'm in tears.
It's the little
right
touches. It's little things like that that you're like, no, he didn't. Like, yes, he did. This dude was driving we had to rewind it. That was the first time I was like, wait, rewind that? Did they really do that? And I was like,
yes.
They really did it. And let me tell you, they're not going to talk about it. So don't even expect them
nope.
to, like, so what's up with
nope.
the invisible guy? Like, that's gone.
Yeah.
That's
you
just
either
a
had
thing
to catch it
that you now have to
or
forget about.
Over with.
Yep. Yep.
Yeah, so Atlanta, if you haven't seen it, it's a fantastic show when it comes out on Netflix or wherever it winds up in the spaces in between now and season two. Check it out. Do yourself a favor. You know, other things that I've kind of been into, The Get Down. Were you able to catch that one? I think you said that was one that was kind of on your binge watch list, correct?
It's on my holiday get right binge watch list, so I have not seen it.
Yeah, so I won't give away too many spoilers. Some of the critiques of it are it's too kind of corny, kind of after school especially. I think it's interesting. I enjoyed it a lot. It's lighthearted. It's about hip hop, but it's not grimy. It's not hardcore. It's bubblegummy, but there's a place for that. And I enjoy it. It riffs on kind of the obsession of early hip hop and late 70s, early 80s African-American teenagers with kung fu movies. And so there are a lot of references to kung fu movies and themes from kung fu movies, which you had to kind of be there. You know what I mean? Like, you know, in Chicago growing up as a kid, we had Samurai Saturdays or, you know, Channel 47, and you had to like get up at 9 to catch that before like cartoons came on. If you got up early enough, you can catch, you know, Samurai Saturday, and you could watch the kung fu movie. And it was
and
just
then
one
go
of those
out
things.
And practice your moves. And then go
right.
out with two
and
sticks.
So it was just yes. And you know, there was that one dude in everybody's neighborhood who took it a little too far and had the, you know, had the whole outfit with the little shoes. Little moccasin sandals type deals, you know, it just kind of took it a little too far, you know, like you're not on a rice paddy, brother. It's all good. You know what I'm saying?
But you spent money on that? Wow. You
right. Like,
paid.
Yeah, you caught that. Like, yeah, man. All right. You ain't getting no chicks, but that's you. Like, ain't nobody checking for Bruce Leroy. Nobody. But that's all good. Do you? I appreciate your originality. Just don't come cry out for me because we're going to fight. Because I'm going to put these hands on you. Right?
So the Get Down is there, and I'm definitely going to do it. So that reminds me, a real quick aside. So RZA did a show here in September where he rescored the 36 Chambers of Shaolin live.
Wow.
So, I mean, this is apparently something he's been trying to do for like 2 years. So, I mean, pretty much you go into the theater, you are watching the movie, but whenever they play music, it's the RZA up there, and he's created pretty much just score for this album. And he's like pushing play and holding it and scratching it and using it. I mean, it's like performance art. For he did this thing, you know, 2.5-hour movie. He was up there in front of the crowd just playing for the entire movie.
Wow.
So,
that's
like,
fantastic. Like,
that's
amazing.
Yeah, so, and I heard this was happening. They're like, oh, they're only doing it. And it was the day that I had to do this gala. And I was more like, so we're going to this gala, and then me and my tux and you and your gown, we're going to watch RZA play at this little theater 5 blocks away. And so we were there in a tuxedo. We were the best-dressed people at the RZA concert movie thing. But, yeah, I had to be there for that. And it was like all the things you're saying about Queen Sugar and Insecure and Luke Cage, like we are now at the point now where people recognize like this is actually something that has value and is worthwhile, and hip hop folks are controlling it. So that was like an aside to this the Get Down thing.
Yeah, absolutely. Luke Cage, I'm deep into right now. I'm like 6 episodes in and enjoying that thoroughly. And just kind of like I'm a comic book kid. I kind of grew up on the X-Men, and that was like I was the brother in the house who had like all the comics and knew all the comic book stuff, nerd stuff. That was me in my house. And I still got like shoe boxes of comic books that eventually I'll give to my kids one day.
It's already online. They're like all those things are on my
right,
iPad.
What are you doing with those boxes? Yeah, but I mean, I bought them, right?
Yeah,
just like they're right next to my tapes. They're in the shoebox next to the shoebox full of the two or three shoeboxes full of my cassettes. All of my
Yeah, I may or may not have a cassette box in my garage, so I can't laugh too hard at that.
You got it. They will not have any use. They will never come back like vinyl. It won't happen. But I have them. Right? I bought them. I already paid for them, so I'm keeping them. That's the conversation I keep having with my wife.
I was like, I'm waiting for them to catch fire and burn my house down and be like, yep, hip hop destroyed my house, burnt my house down.
Right.
But Luke Cage is good. I won't ruin it for you. I thoroughly enjoyed it, and that's, you know, it's a, I think the guy Coker kind of described it like it's a love, what do you call it, like a love story for Harlem. Like, he just wanted to capture Harlem as well as he could. And obviously it's, some of it is a little stilted and corny, and it kind of mixes genres. It's kind of got like a, you know, roaring 20s feel, and then it's also got like a 90s feel. But I'm with it. I'm all the way there. I'm like, you can mix and match time frame. I don't care. It's Harlem. NY. It's everything I love. It's the barbershop. It's the dude that plays chess at the barbershop. It's, you know, gangstar titles to every episode. I'm here for all of this.
Yes. Yeah. So I'm enjoying Luke Cage. And Queen Sugar is one that, if you haven't seen that, it was on the OWN network. It just finished up its first season. It's based upon a book. This is one of my wife's kind of like, you need to watch this with me. And I'm kind of like, okay, you watch stuff with me, I'll watch this with you. And so it's just a great story about this family in Louisiana. The father dies. He leaves them this sugar farm. They got to figure out how to make it pop. And just kind of their hustle, their grind, being everyday folks trying to make it in Louisiana with a sugar farm that you got to kind of figure out how to make profitable. So it's really good. The music, again, Alabama Shakes, Jesse Boykins III. I mean, they just play all these different artists that are in there, and it's kind of like, oh yeah. And, you know, I'm the music person in the house, and so, you know, something is played, and that's what really kind of, I was like, wait a minute, they playing that on here?
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to have to pay a little bit closer attention.
Yeah,
you know,
you have my attention.
Who's running it for you?
Yeah.
Exactly. And I appreciate that. Like, oh, you get me. You see me. World, you see me. You know what I mean? Like, you get people like me. And so that's really reaffirming, and that makes you want to watch it more, right? To see what are they going to put in here next week? And am I going to recognize it? And if I don't, what does that mean? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I'm that guy, right? So, and then there's Insecure, which is another one my wife kind of put me onto, and there's been a ridiculous buzz about this particular show on Black Twitter, and Twitter in general. I won't give away. It's just about, you know, a couple of black girls in L.A. trying to figure out life, and it's good, though. It's good. It's hilarious. It's funny.
I watched a pilot.
You know, relationship stuff.
You'll always get me if it's smart, I'm in. Right? If it doesn't go for the easy joke and it goes for, like, someone worked to really make this funny, not just, like, stupid ha-ha funny, like, you know, then I'm in. So I watched the pilot, and I was like, okay, this is good. I'm going to have to watch this, and I'll probably have to watch with my wife. So it'll take me 3 months to get through it because – she's got every housewife show that she has to get through before she can get to our joint one. So
God
by
bless
some
you,
by next summer, I'll have watched The Get Down and Insecure. I'll let you know.
All right. But, I mean, it's just a real sweet spot for visual black art, man. I mean, like, it's just a real sweet spot for television, for black people. And sometimes you gotta take a step back and be like, yo man, in 10 years we're gonna look at this like year and be like, wow, that was a lot popping, you know, because it won't stay like this forever. Like, that's the other thing, like, we can't have stuff for a long time. Like, we can't bank on this just being here. You know what I'm saying? Like, we can't do that. Like, so when you got to enjoy it, take notice of it, and appreciate it, and support it. You know, if it's well done and it's run by the right kind of folks, you got to support it. You gotta roll with it, because again, if we don't support it, it won't be there. It really will not be around again. You know.
Word.
So.
Yep.
So man, it's been great chopping it up with you, bro. You know, we're gonna wrap this up and put a pretty bow on it. Before we get off the air, let's give them a quick preview of the year in review that's coming up real soon.
Yeah.
Like, when do you expect to have it ready to drop? We'll get it up on our website again. So that people can find it. We'll link you to it through the podcast. We'll probably hit you off with another podcast once it drops, and we'll kind of go through it on air and hit you with a link. We'll get that out on social media and make sure you can check it out. So what do you got?
Yeah.
Give us a little teaser of what you have in store this year.
Yeah, so this is, I think this year – there's a lot of good music this year. Again, probably even more than last year. But just within hip hop, you know, some of the stuff we talked about, you know, the group, you know, the return of the group, and showing how, you know, you can make great albums, you know, as a group, and these are veterans kind of coming in. So there's a strong presence there. I think the first half of the year, three or four albums came out, and I think, you know, they've been forgotten. I mean, so Kanye's hasn't, because he's Kanye. But some of the other stuff, I think, you know, once I kind of match them one to one, I was like, yeah, I think these things still hold up. So I think a lot of the first quarter drops that that we talked about in May, at least one of them will make an appearance. And then I think I'm going to have to put one of these LP EP things in the top five, which I haven't done before, but they're really good and they're album quality. And so I think trying to figure out between, you know, like Schoolboy Q or Rhapsody, I either got to dive in and say like, all right, this is an album and it all goes, maybe like the Oscars went from 5 to 10. I'll just do 10. I don't know. But all those things, kind of will be in, and the ordering I haven't, you know, figured out yet on my own, but I think I know what the top five or six are. And so I'm going to try and make the argument and then invite discussion.
Excellent. I'll be interested to see what you got in there. I'm intrigued. I'm excited. I want to see what's up. Cause I know, There's been a lot that's been out, and, you know, as I kind of think about, like, yeah, there's some stuff that came out, like, January, February that I kind of forgot about. I'm going to have to go check it out again. That'll be excellent. That'll be excellent. So, listeners out there, be on the lookout. We'll make sure that you have access to that. We'll give you a link on the pod. We'll give you a link on Twitter, Facebook feeds, all that kind of stuff. It'll be out there, and we will get that out so that you can check that out. And, you know, you'll probably find – the great thing about year-end lists is there are always a few gems that you missed.
Yeah.
It's a great way – I always kind of go through – I have some go-to websites that I kind of go to see kind of their top songs of the year or best albums of the year, because there are always some things that I just missed. Like, I'm not 16 anymore, and I can't spend all day on this stuff.
Surprising. It takes a lot of time. How did I have this time? I could have, like, been an astrophysicist if I spent all the time in high school doing math and physics that I did on listening to pirated radio at 3 o'clock in the morning. God.
Yes.
All
yes, right. Right.
But now I'm
right,
here
trying
doing
to find
these lists.
That hidden gem. Yeah.
Yeah, there you go.
Exactly. Now I have all of this other knowledge about hip-hop and comic books and movies and television shows that is totally useless until I get into a conversation with somebody else that knows this stuff.
That's hustle and
flow. Then it's great. Then it's great. You know what I mean? Yeah. So, but again, be on the lookout for it. This does it for this edition of Hustle and Flows. Thank you, Sekou, man. It's been a blast. We will try and get another one out for you all within the next couple of weeks. Again, with the holidays hitting, you know, we're going to be traveling, doing the Family Guy thing. But then once the new year comes back, we're going to try and get back on the air together and give you guys another hot 60 minutes of a podcast. This one's a 60 plus. So enjoy yourselves. Enjoy this one. All right. Thank you again, brother. And as always, to the folks out there, peace.